Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours.
Well, I would say it's slightly different, and I would not say it's possibilities, not opportunities. Opportunities are the things that look like they're going to come through that don't come through. And possibilities are the things that show up that you get to choose and create from.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executives After Hours. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. That was Mr. Gary Douglas. He's the founder of Access Consciousness. It's basically a program that is in 170 countries around the world, helping people realize to become a better version of themselves, if you will. And Gary and I have this amazing conversation that at a time was so deep. When you get to the second half of this podcast, we're having some really serious philosophical Eastern philosophy conversations that will give you pause to reflect on your own life, as it did me. There'll be lots of like awkward silence moments where I'm thinking and processing. But it was a great interview. So today on the show, Mr. Gary Douglas, founder of Access Consciousness. I am having tons of stuff going on, so check out the vlog on YouTube, check out my blog on my website, find me on Medium if you want, or Thrive Global. I need you to subscribe, to like, to share, to love, embrace what I'm doing to the masses, and I want everyone to have an awesome week, and I'll talk to you on Thursday. All right, see you! Today on Executives After Hours, I had the pleasure to speak with Mr. Gary Douglas, founder of Access Conscious. How are you, Gary?
I'm good, and it's Access Consciousness.
Oh, sorry, I dropped the ness. Sorry. Let me try that again.
You don't want to drop the ness unless you're in the lock.
Yeah. So it's Access
sorry,
Consciousness.
Bad. Yes.
So, you know, in the show, I previously would say, okay, let's start from when you were a child and move forward. But what I've started doing is let's go in reverse and only reverse talking about what you do now. And then I'm going to jump the tracks. We're going to go some other direction. But tell me what Access Consciousness is.
Access is a set of tools and techniques that are designed to help you change whatever isn't working in your life. And it's like each person has sort of like their own point of view. Like I just talked to my youngest son today, and he was talking about how he realized he'd become his own biggest enemy. I said, well, you know what? If you just ask a question, you could get out of that. It might change some things for you. He said, what's the question? I said, the question is, what's right about me I'm not getting, rather than what's wrong with me. And the majority of us go around looking at what's wrong with us, thinking that if we can figure out what's wrong with us, we'll finally get it right. But you really have to ask, so what's right about me I'm not getting? And what's right about this situation that I'm not getting? And when you do that, what opens is this door of the possibility of a greater choice than the one we think we have. If you look for what's wrong, you're only going to find what's wrong. If you look for what's right, you're going to find all kinds of answers you never had before.
So I love this because this is currently the journey I'm going on personally. So for me, I've really struggled in the past because to what your son said, I feel like I get my own way. I'm my own worst enemy. And so I really can appreciate this conversation from that perspective. And it sounds to me, this concept or tools sound very similar to something called appreciative inquiry. Are you familiar with that?
Not aware of that.
Okay. It's not good or bad. Appreciative inquiry is premise, essentially, and it's a question-based premise similar to yours, but it's always about looking to the positive and all of the different things going on around you at that time when you were your best self. And so is this something that Access does, is different situations and contexts provides questions and tools for you to retrain the way you think and ask questions?
It's actually to train you to not look for answers, but to ask questions. Because every time you ask a question, you open the doors to multiple possibilities. Every time you choose and you open your life to choice, and choice is the greatest source of creation on the friggin' planet. Every time you choose something, you open the door to greater possibilities. And every time you choose another possibility, you open the door to that which will create the contribution that the universe wants to be to us. We really need to look for, you know, the question, the choice, the possibility, and the contribution that can come our way by just being in the question and not making it. And the question is about gaining awareness, not about getting an answer. And as long as we keep looking for an answer, we're going to keep creating a place where we limit what we can have.
So I love that. So can you walk me through, if I don't know if it's possible or not, but walk me through what this would look like for someone?
Well, I talked with a guy today, and he was talking about the fact that he grew up in, you know, in a family that was poverty prone and conscious. You know, their consciousness was about poverty, not about possibility. And he had tried to buy some penny stock yesterday, and it had doubled in value overnight. And he was really frustrated because he felt like, once again, he had been thwarted. I said, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "Well, it's like I feel like I'm in a hair's breadth of making a bunch of money. And just as the possibility opens up, something comes along and shuts it down. And what had shut it down this time was that his bank, who he has a bunch of money with, refused to buy the stock for him because it was penny stock." And he went, "What the hell is going on here?" He says, "This happens to me. This has happened to me throughout my life where I think I'm just about to make a bunch of money. And instead, I get shot down in some way." And what had happened with this particular stock is it had doubled overnight. And so it went from like 1.6 cents to, you know, 3.2 cents and, you know, in a few hours. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't been able to buy any. And so I went, okay, so what, you know, it's like what judgment, alignments, inventions, and lies are you using to create the dominance of the evil of never getting what you desire that keeps you thinking that you will always be thwarted and stopped in creation of a greater possibility? And it's like all this energy came up, and I said, "Well, you destroy and uncreate all that?" Because it's like the energy that comes up that stops us is literally the energy of all the points of view that we bought from others, everything we grew up with, everything we've been told we can't be or do, and everything we bought as somebody else's point of view as though it's ours. And for him, something major came up. I cannot recall at this moment what it was, but this major thing came up, and I asked him to destroy and uncreate that, because it's like if you destroy and uncreate what has you trapped, then suddenly the door is open and more possibility shows up. And it did for him. And it was great because he was like, "Oh my God, I know I can get free now." And I went, "Cool."
So, Gary, how did you end up in this space, right? Because you have kind of this eclectic background.
That's putting it mildly.
I was trying to be mild, so I guess I put it correctly. How did you end up?
Are you British? You're understanding things.
Yeah. I actually live in the Middle East right now. I don't know if you know that. I live just outside Dubai.
Oh, I realize that.
Yeah. So you were talking to me in Dubai, and you are in San Diego?
I live in Houston, Texas, and right now I'm actually in Paris.
Oh, wow. There we go. Because, you know, I don't think my audience realizes this. I didn't realize this until I did the research, but, you know, access consciousness is all over the world. Like, what are the stats?
76 countries.
How many?
176.
That's pretty prolific. Prolific.
That's, yeah. I mean, it's like, and it wasn't, I set out to do this. It's like, I would have someone come and they would then share it with a friend of theirs in another country. And then I'd all of a sudden have a whole lot of people in that country wanting to know what I had. And then pretty soon it's like, and it just has literally, it's like 4 years ago, we were in 47 countries.
Wow.
In 4 years, we've gone from 47 to 176. And it's not that we're advertising. It's not that we're like trying to do this. It's like literally the demand is growing faster than we can accommodate it. And it is, it's wonderful, it's bizarre, and not at all what I anticipated, expected, or set out to do.
Why do you think it's resonating?
Because it's about where, you know, it's like people are frustrated. I mean, why do you think Trump got elected? People are frustrated with how things have been, and they know something has to change. And, you know, it's like everybody except Trump knows we have global warming. And so people know things have to be different or the Earth's going to die. We are not taking care of it very well. So, you know, it's like you got to look at how do you create something different in this world. And so everything we've done is to give you tools and techniques to change what isn't working and get something greater. And when the giant economic downturn occurred, it's like 50% of the people in access lost half of their net worth, quote unquote, but their income increased 20%. Now, how the hell did that occur? I have no clue, other than the fact that we always ask a question like, how's it getting any better than this? And it's like, because we're living in the question instead of the answer, it's like people don't go, oh my God, I lost 50%. It's like, okay, so how's it getting any better than this? And most of those people have regained more than the 50% they lost in the, you know, in the last 5 years since it occurred. And it's like, wow, this is bizarre.
But Gary, that doesn't answer my question in terms of why do you think this particular because method is resonating, people, right?
People know that they need change and they know that they're looking for it. And the thing I say to people is like, one thing I realize is everybody that's come to Access is a seeker. Somebody always knew there had to be a different choice, but they didn't know where to find it. And what happens when they come to Access is they seem to find what they've been looking for that no one else had ever been able to define as what they were looking for. And I'm not trying to come up with the answer because from my point of view, you're the only one who knows what's really true for you. I can know what's true for me, but I can't know what's true for you because you know you better than anybody else does. So what would it be like if everybody was willing to trust themselves enough to know that they knew? And that's one of the things that we try to do in Access is to get people to recognize that you know, it's like the truth is you know everything that's right for you. And what if you were willing to trust yourself to know that you knew? Empowering people to know that they know is one of the things we work to accomplish.
It seems to me that in that philosophy, in giving people the power, it's giving them the confidence, which is what many people lack in making decisions. Do you think?
Well, I don't know that it's giving them confidence as much as getting them to recognize what they actually know is true. I mean, it's like I always thought that if people had a choice between what would work and what wouldn't work, they would choose what worked. But then I discovered that people couldn't, didn't, and wouldn't. I'm going, why is it that people aren't choosing this? So I began to ask the question. So what would people have to choose or be or do to get where they wanted to go? And that's how a lot of Access came into existence, is I've always been asking that question, looking for the place in which people could recognize what was true for them. Because if you actually get what's true for you, it's like, I mean, you've done this program and it has been about what's true for you, has it not?
Done which program?
I mean, this program. You do what you do because this is what works for you. And you keep learning new and great things as a result of it. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. And it's like, and the thing is, you're a seeker. You're willing to see what is true for you. And you may not have all the answers, and you may not have everything you desire, but somewhere along the line, you realize there's a greater possibility and a different choice that you could have. And that's the one thing I see about people who come to Access. They know there's got to be another choice.
Yeah, I think for me, it's always about curiosity of a different way. So, yeah, to your point, I think there's I feel like there's a different choice. And so I'm curious to explore how to get to a different place that is more constructive and less destructive. So how did you get started in this Access consciousness? Like, where did this come from for you?
Well, it started out, actually, I was trying to become a channel. I wanted to, you know, become one of those guys that sits there with their eyes closed doing Omni Regni Kyo or whatever it was. And I wanted to be really cool because everybody knew that channels were cool. And so I started that, and it didn't exactly work out right. But what came out of it was the beginnings of what Access is today. And so I started teaching the classes with my eyes closed. And then one day, the guy left and said, "You're on your own, get to work." And from then on, I had to ask questions and I had to figure out what else and talk about what else and talk about what's possible. And I began to learn a whole lot of things. And from it came this place of recognizing if you ask a question, the universe will do everything it can to give you an answer. And so few people look for the question that will give them the awareness of a different possibility. They ask for something that will give them the answer that makes them right. And the one thing I learned was there's no right, there is no wrong, but what you make it so. So what's going to happen if you're willing to see what is actually possible, not have a fixed point of view about it?
Seems very Buddha-esque.
It is. And that's sort of the fun part about it is, you know, it's like I studied every church, cult, and religion known to mankind, I think. And I tried all of them. And this sort of like ties all of them together. In a strange way. And so, it's like the thing I always say to people, it's like the thing about Access is you will find no answers, but you will find the awareness of what you've been looking for, because in it, all that is true in every church, cult, or religion is true. And all that's a lie makes you feel heavy and is just a lie. Don't buy the lie, look for the truth, and it will set you free.
How old were you when you started going down this path?
I started going down the path when I was 37.
So what was it at 37 or 35 that triggered inside you to want to go down this path? What were you doing at this time?
Drugs, sex, and rock and roll.
In that order or in different orders?
Depended on the day.
Yeah. So we'll explain that. Give me more than that.
I did a lot of sex. I did a lot of drugs. I did a lot of rock and roll. And I was looking for something that somehow would give me a sense that my life had some meaning or value. And it never got there. And I went, okay, I've done drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Now what do I need to choose? And then I decided I would try and all that, you know, normal stuff. And I'm not good at normal. I was not good at marriage, and I was not good as a parent. And, you know, it's like, okay, fine. I did not know what it would do. I just knew something had to be different. Mm-hmm.
So can I ask why you were doing all the sex, drugs, and rock and roll? Was it just the time period? Was it like confusion, exploration?
This was the 70s, dude.
That's no, I'm not judging. Did. I'm not judging, but like you had to have – that couldn't have been everything you were doing. You had to have a job or you had to have, you know, support someone yourself or
– Actually, I think probably the biggest change was in 1970, I was working for a restaurant and it was a big chain. And it, you know, it's like – and I was an assistant manager and I was, you know, trying to be cool and didn't really enjoy it. And then I hurt my back. And it's like, and I had back operation and I was flat on my back for 6 months. And I was living in my house. I was all alone. And nobody came to see me and nobody called me. And I read a story about this kid who was in a big family, and at 16, he died on his 16th birthday and nobody noticed. I went, wow, I could die here and nobody would notice either. And I realized, okay, so I need to change something in my life, because I would really like to know that people know me. I'd like to know what they know, and I'd like to create something different. So I started saving money while I was flat on my back. And I decided I was going to go to Europe, because I'd always wanted to go to Europe. So I got my passport and I got my ticket to Europe, and I went to Europe for 6 months. And while I was there, it's like I suddenly had no reference point for who or what I was. I wasn't my dog's owner. I wasn't my car's owner. I wasn't my job. I wasn't my parents' child. I was me. And it's like, and for the first time ever, I got to know me. And that was a great gift. And it's like, literally, I could invent myself new every friggin' day. And I did. And, you know, like I had so many adventures and got so many changes and did all kinds of crazy ass shit that should, none of that happened. And I had adventures that were choices that other people don't get. And I went, this is the way I want to live my life. And I went home, and all the people that I had known before I left, it changed not at all. I had been gone 6 months and I had changed totally. And they were still the same people.
So I actually think something you said, which is really powerful, is that you left and you evolved, and then you came back.
Yes.
And no one else's bus has left the station. And as me, as someone who has lived in Japan for a year, nearly 4 years in Australia, now I'm in the Middle East. That is something I've always struggled with every time I come back to the States to live. Is that I feel like I'm a round circle in a square hole, or a square peg in a round hole, whatever that saying is.
Yeah.
Because no one really understands my perspective, because many people haven't done what I've done. And I'm not hoity-toity or think I'm better than someone. It's just a choice that I happen to make for myself, because it was really important. But I completely understand your perspective on there. So when you get back and you feel like your bus has moved to a different station, what do you do different to acclimate yourself to humans, right? Like, you need to have relationships. So what do you do?
I divorced them, basically. But actually, I didn't really divorce them. They divorced me. They did not like me anymore because I was different. They made fun of me. They told everybody I was weird. They told everybody I was bad. And it's like, I went, wow. And luckily, while I was gone, my aunt died and I inherited $7,000. So I moved into a little cabin in the mountains and lived with my dogs, my cats, and my horses, and went screw the world and just stayed alone, because it was a really nice time to be in, you know, in that sense of peace of being with self.
Where were you?
And I got comfortable with myself for the first time in my life, because I was always uncomfortable with myself, because I thought I needed people. I thought I needed the family. I thought I needed all kinds of things that weren't actually true. And when I got back, finding that out and realizing that kind of set me free.
So where were you living at this time?
I was living in Santa Barbara.
Okay. Beautiful part of the world, by the way. And so when you go on this journey, I mean, you're really going on this journey of self-discovery at this point. Did you?
Yeah, but I realize it was self-discovery. I mean, it's like I had friends who showed me all their pictures of their trips to Europe, and I went, wow, that's so cool. Where is that? And they go, I don't know. And where is that? I don't know. Where is that? I don't know. So I went, you know what? I'm not going to take a camera with me. I'm just going to use my head and go with that.
You've got this fascinating life, and you're living it to the fullest at this point, right? And do you think you're living your life fuller now than you were when you were 40?
Oh yeah. You know, I sort of started on this really when I was about 55, you know, and it's like everybody says, well, when did you finally decide to start living? I said, I actually started to live really when I was 55. And it's like at 55 is when I went, okay, you know what? It's like, I need more in my life. I need to have something that gives me a real sense of joy in waking up, because I had the family, I had the cars and all that kind of stuff, and I lost it all. And when I lost everything, people that had been my friends would never talk to me again because they were afraid I had the cooties and that I was going to take them down the same trail I had gone down with, you know, losing everything.
Can I ask how you lost it?
Yeah, I was in real estate, and I was in real estate, and I had been, I'd been selling a lot, and then the market turned around, and it just, you know, went to hell. And when it went to hell, it's like I could not keep up the payments on my house, so I lost my house, I lost my car, I lost everything. And then, you know, it's like, and then I was trying to create more, and that's when I started into this stuff about access.
And so even though you started this journey in your 30s, this personal journey,
yeah,
you had work the whole time. So you're a realtor in Santa Barbara. And so when everything
I actually a lot of things. I was in restaurant business up until I went to Europe. When I got back from Europe, I went back to the real estate business. But at the same time, when I was a kid, I had taken up upholstery and done it on my own. And so I went and did it again. And, you know, it's like I just spent huge amounts of time trying to create, you know, different ways of doing things so I would have less time having to work and more time to have drugs and sex.
And so were you married during part of this or any of this or some of this?
I didn't get married until I was 37.
And did it stick or not stick? It sounded like it did not stick.
It did not stick.
And you also said earlier that you found yourself not being a very good dad. Why do you think that?
Because it's like I could not make my kids the primary focal point of my life. Mm. I had friends who, you know, it's like they would do anything for their kids. And I would, you know, it's like I tried being a coach at one point, but I was really bad at it. I mean, I knew nothing about soccer. And I supposedly was supposed to be an assistant coach. And then the real coach left, and I knew nothing about soccer. But I was supposed to teach this team of little guys. And it's like, I was not good at it. And I didn't enjoy it. And I yelled at the kids. And I, you know, bribed them with ice cream. And I did everything I could to get them to win. But, you know, it's like, I was not a good parent because I would not put my kids first. I put my own point of view first.
So I'm just curious, you know, because I'm trying to, you know, part of what I try to do on this podcast is kind of piece, and you have a very long history, so it's a bit more difficult here than some of my guests, but I try to piece together patterns in your life. And one of the things I haven't really asked you was, what was life like when you were a kid?
Well, I grew up in Leave It to Beaver Land.
Hmm.
You know, do you even know what that is?
Yeah, of course.
To understand.
First of all, I say that is a valid statement. Second of all, I do know what it is. So you, I think I've read somewhere a Midwest family. So a good Midwest family.
My family came from the Midwest. They came from Missouri. I was born there. And we lived in San Diego, California. And, you know, my mother was the, you know, the Cub Scout person, and she sweetheart of a person. She was a kind, loving person. My father worked all the time. He was working two jobs all the time to try and give his family get, because he grew up in the Depression, and his father left his mother when he was little, so he decided that he was going to, you know, protect his family, and he worked all the time, and, you know, he died when I was 17 from heart failure. So it's like, you know, it's like we went from middle class to not so well off in a heartbeat. And I went out and got a job, and I took care of business, and I tried to take care of my mom, and she wouldn't let me. And it was like, it was a adventurous life in reality from my point of view.
Did you have any siblings?
I had a sister. I have a sister. And she still lives in San Diego.
And so, you know, I think that's really – for my dad died when I was 20 from congestive heart failure. So I can completely understand, you know, the tragedy of that at such a young age. Do you think that impacted you – thinking of myself when I asked this question, do you think it impacted you in the choices that you made later on in terms of careers or jobs or women or whatever?
Yeah, I think the impact it really had on me was I realized that my father – I didn't realize it. I didn't find this out until after he died, but he had been told he had 2 years to live. And it's like, and I watched him in those last 2 years of his life change totally. He became a different person. And when he died and I learned that, I went, oh, that explains why he died. And I began to realize, and in the last 2 years of his life, I was pissed at him because he'd done something that pissed me off. So I, you know, was going to make him suffer. So I didn't talk to him. And then he died, and I hadn't got a chance to actually undo all the crap I'd created. And I realized, you know what? You never know when somebody's going to die, and you don't know when you're going to die. So maybe you better live for today, because tomorrow you might die. And it's like, and you better tell people what's actually true for you today, because they could die. And don't wait until they're dead and wish you had said what you should have said that you didn't say.
Can I just say how much I appreciate you saying that and the normality that that gives me? Because that's exactly how I lived my life after my dad died, and nobody understood it. Nobody got it. Nobody understood why I was. And I tended to make very short-term decisions quite often. And even now I fight against them because in my psyche, and I say this to my wife all the time, I'm like, I could die tomorrow. So fuck, like, why not just go do X or go have this experience or go, you know?
That's why you can live in other countries, because you want to experience everything to the fullest.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that occurred with me is like, I wanted to live everything to the fullest. I no longer was willing to have an ordinary life. I knew I had to do everything I could to create as much as I could in my life, which is why I decided to go to Europe, because I'd never been, because I'd always wanted to go. And I thought it was very cute because I was doing a horse clinic down in Costa Rica. And I asked my sister if she wanted to come, and she did. And then the next year I said, well, would you like to come this year? And she goes, no, I've been out of the country two times this last year, and that's enough for one lifetime. I said, where else did you go? And she goes, Hawaii. I said, you do know that Hawaii is one of the states, right? Yeah, but it's called cross water.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And so, that's the point at which I realized my sister and I don't have that much in common.
So let me ask you a question, because, you know, I was thinking, sorry, not to go back to the dad thing, but we all have dad issues on some level. So one of the things that I was really curious about, because again, I'm thinking about my life and we have some parallels there, is that sometimes because of that trait that I've developed since my dad's death, it has created chaos, because I wanted that chaos, because I felt like I needed that change, or I needed to ruffle someone's feathers, or I needed X.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay. So I have the point of view that there's either order or chaos. And chaos is where there always has to be change and question. And order is where you always have an answer and you live the same life over and over again.
Okay.
So what's wrong with chaos, and what's the difference between chaos and havoc?
Ooh. So I guess in my mind, chaos is okay if it's safe. Havoc borderlines on uncontrollable chaos.
Correct. You know, and the thing is, chaos is about change, and havoc is about destruction.
But let's talk about that, because I think that's, you know, one of the topics that Justine, you know, I said back to her, like, I think the gift of chaos or gift of adversity is a very underrated attribute, right? Maybe that's not the right phrase. It's a very underrated part of our world that we don't evaluate and we don't embrace.
I'd say it's slightly different. I'd say it's an underrated possibility that we should all be choosing.
So let's unpack that a little bit, because I mean, you've had your fair share of adversity in your life. You know, I call them crucibles. And so, you know, you've had these fair share of crucibles in your life. Is there any one crucible that stands out to you that has defined you, or are you a culmination of your adversity moments?
I think that I'm really a culmination of all the crucibles. Do you know that they say that you know, the thing that they melt glass in, it's called a crucible?
Yes, I did know that, because I had to look it up for the title of my book. So.
Yeah. You know, and so it's like seeing that, it's like the thing is, it's like you couldn't blow your life into the figure it is without the crucibles of possibility. And for me, it's like every choice we make creates something. So what does it create? What choice is creating? What does this choice create? What does this choice create?
Well, isn't it the opportunity in those? I think it's always the opportunity in those choices and the meaning that we make out of those choices.
Well, I would say it's slightly different, and I would not say it's possibilities, not opportunities. Opportunities are the things that look like they're going to come through that don't come through. And possibilities are the things that show up that you get to choose and create from.
Can you say that again one more time?
Opportunities are the things that show up that look like they're going to come through and give you the result you were looking for. And possibilities are the things that show up in your life that create a different reality for you because you choose them.
I like that. I like that nugget. That's a good differentiation there. Thank you for that.
It's a great differentiation, and it's made my life so much easier, because I always used to get sidetracked by the possibilities. I mean, by the opportunities, sorry. The opportunity would show up, and I go, oh, God, finally I'm going to get what I wanted. Then it wouldn't come through. I go, what did I do that made this wrong or made this not work? Not a good question. But with possibilities, things show up, and the choices you make then allow those things to actualize in life. And when things actualize in life, a whole new universe opens up for us in ways that, you know, that you can't explain to other people.
So let's go back to that, because I definitely do the opportunity thing. And I definitely have been let down 1,000 times because of it. So,
yeah. Me too. Which is why I started to look at, okay, what is it I'm not getting here? Because that's a question I've asked a lot of my life. So what's happening here that I'm not getting?
So what's an example? Like, give me, I don't know if you want me to like give you an example, or like, I'm just trying to think of a way to like contextualize this for myself. So let's say, I have a book.
Okay.
Coming.
I can give you.
Go ahead.
Here we go. I'll give you one. Okay. So I went away to Europe for 6 months. And when I came back, before I left, I'd had this lady who'd been asking me to ride her horses for her, because I used to train horses. And she started calling me, but when I left, she'd been married and she had a couple of kids, and her husband was a high-powered lawyer in Santa Barbara, and I didn't want to have anything to do with a married woman, so I refused to call her back. Then, about 6 months later, she married a guy who looked enough like me to be my brother, and 6 months after that, she died of a cerebral aneurysm. And left him $67 million. The opportunity had been presented to me, and the possibility had been presented to me, and I wouldn't take that possibility because I thought it was an opportunity for a disaster.
I'm trying to understand that. So the possibility.
The possibility of having lots of money was presented to me because this woman called me. But I didn't ask a question. I didn't ask what's right about this I'm not getting. I didn't ask, is she divorced? I didn't ask what's her current marital status. Mm-hmm. I just assumed she was like hitting on me again. And I thought it was wrong. Mm. Every time you come to a conclusion, you cut off all awareness of possibility. And that's when opportunity shows up.
Isn't that the hardest thing to reach? Like, for me, That would be one of hardest things to retrain my brain.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, as a scientist, I guess, as a researcher, I have a tendency to always want to find that conclusion, find that result, you know, uncover that nugget of information.
Yeah.
And keeping the opportunity open to the possibilities by asking the right questions is a difficult proposition for many people, not just a researcher, but for many people in general. How did you train yourself to redirect, to ask the right question?
Well, yes, like lots of things occurred in my life, but one of the things that I got to was a thing called, there was a book, a set of books called The Alexandrian Quartet by Lawrence Durrell. Great books, and it's written from five different people's points of view about the same events in Alexandria in the 20s. And it's like same events, different points of view. And I began to realize after reading that everybody has that as a reality. You see things only from your perspective. You cannot see them from other people's perspectives unless you ask a question. And so I began to ask the question, so what perspective am I not able to see or not willing to see here that could change all this? Because the thing about the books is they put forward this premise that if you don't look at all the possibilities, then you end up choosing a possibility that leads to whatever disaster you choose in your life. And most people choose disaster.
Do you think people innately like chaos in their own life or havoc in their own life?
Most people try to avoid havoc, try to choose order so that they can have a predictable life. And obviously you're not one of those. And a few of us choose the chaos that creates an unpredictable life based on adventure and possibility, a whole different new universe.
So what do you think that I was thinking about this as you were describing this concept and this idea? And what do you think the greatest gift has been to you from going through this process and then teaching this process thousands of times?
Well, it's like the one thing that continually occurs is I get to give these perspectives to people and get them to, you know, knock themselves out of the order they're trying to live in. And so many people live from an order based on what their parents tell them or what they think is going to make somebody else happy rather than what makes them happy. And it's like because of my father, because of a whole lot of things in my life, I began to realize that for me, it's like I don't want to choose against someone because choosing against someone or something isn't going to create happiness. But I've got to stop choosing against me if I want to have happiness. And happiness is a choice we have that few people ever choose.
That's my final question, by the way, of the interview. You just ruined it ahead of time. So thanks, Gary. I'm kidding. As we're wrapping this thing up, this interview, you know, you're this man who is driven with this internal flame of passion to teach people to really, the name of your company, access their consciousness for greater good, right? Is there a line, and I don't know if there's an answer for this or if there is, but is there a line where this process is so self-focused that you forget the other?
No, because the one thing you got to get is every point of view you have is just an interesting point of view. It's not right or wrong or good or bad. It's just a point of view. Now, what could you choose if you had no point of view? And it's like the reality is we all have different perspectives. And that was the whole thing about the Alexandrian Quartet, is realizing I can have one point of view and somebody else can have another. Which one is right? Neither. They're just different. So what am I making right that's limiting me? And what could I choose that would not limit me? And what could I choose that would create a greater possibility in life?
And I think that's
I'm more interested in that than anything else.
What was that? Sorry.
I'm more interested in that than anything else.
Because I think that's the hardest thing is to think about the other possibilities or perspectives. And because it's easy to ask the question, but it's hard to explore it, pull it apart, beat it up, to think about what the other possible.
If you start realizing that which is true always makes you feel light, and that which is a lie always makes you feel heavy, There's not a lot of pulling apart that you have to do.
But can't there be two truths?
No.
Why not?
There's only one thing that is true, and there are millions of truths.
Okay, so unpack that for me. Because in my head, I'm thinking your truth and my truth aren't going to be the same truths. That's fair.
They're not going to be the same truth, but what is true is always true.
This is some serious Buddha shit. All right, hold on.
Yeah, it is some Buddha shit. But the thing is, you got to get, okay, it's like if I say I love you and you say you love me, are we talking about the same thing?
I'm going to go with no, because we're going to both define that differently probably.
Correct. We define love differently. We always do.
But we're still able to fulfill each other's needs under the premise of love.
Yeah, but that's not love. But there is one thing that is always true, is gratitude. See, I'm grateful for people who lie to me. Because I know I can trust them absolutely that they will lie to me. Huh. Now that's what is true. The truth is, I don't want to believe that people lie.
Super intense stuff.
I
love it. It's just, these are questions that are so, I don't know if esoteric is the right word, but are so heady that you have to kind of sit with and stir with and think, yeah. Okay. And perhaps many people struggle with that process of just letting it stir. You know, like, do you have an active meditation practice?
Yes, it's called life.
So how are you defining active?
It's living.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you live from no point of view, no right or wrong, good or bad, but just presence with everything, you're a walking, talking meditation. And if you talk, if you turn off your mind, it's like we can be a walking, talking meditation. It's like an interesting point of view. I have this point of view is what I did for every point of view I had for a full year. And at the end of it, I had no points of view. I could just see what was in front of me.
So you're a very Eastern philosophy-esque individual. And
I know. Disgusting?
No. Listen, there's something, you know, there's a guy I interviewed a while back named Mo Gadot, who's from the Middle East, but works for Google, travels all over. And he wrote this book called Solve for Happy. And in the book, essentially, you know, he's an engineer by training. And so what he wanted to do is deconstruct what is happiness, right? And create an equation that an engineer would understand. And I'm paraphrasing here, but what he came up to in terms of his equation is essentially your happiness is equal to plus or minus the expectations that you set. And
well, I would have a slightly different point of view, because my point of view is if you have a projection or an expectation, you will always have to have a separation, judgment, and rejection of you, because whatever you project or expect of anyone becomes the disappointment called living.
And so let me take this one thing a step further. But his premise of that equation is that you have no expectations. So if you have no expectations, yeah, you're never disappointed. You're always happy.
I agree.
And so that was his premise, is that you just don't have expectations. You be in the present and you be in the now. And that allows you to fully embrace the process.
I agree with him.
Yeah.
You know, my point of view, get rid of your projections and expectations. Then whatever shows up is what shows up, and you're present.
And that's such an evolved perspective. Because this human nature is we judge, typically. Not always. Maybe you don't.
We don't. I think that's incorrect.
You don't think we judge? It's not a typical behavior?
No. I think that people are far more psychic than they realize. And when you're around people that judge, you assume that their judgment is your judgment that has nothing to do with what is true and only has to do with how you pick up their stuff. One of the things that I've done is I've worked with kids who have ADD, ADHD, OCD, and autism. And I was working with a little girl in Santa Barbara who thought she had OCD, and they were trying to put her on medication, and her father didn't want her to. Her mother eventually did, but I met with her, and she was said, I'm a dirty girl. I said, why? I have pictures all the time of having sex with women. I go, what? And I said, okay, so close your eyes and tell me where that's coming from. And she pointed, and next door was a single man who was in his 30s who was watching porn all the time. And this little girl who was 8 was picking that up from her next door neighbor and assuming it was her desire to have sex with women.
Wow.
And when I got her to realize that it wasn't hers, it was the next door neighbor's. I didn't find that out until after the father went over and found out that his neighbor was watching porn all the time. Once I got her to realize that, all the pictures went away. And I said to her, you got to ask. You're really more aware than you realize. It's like you have this weird kind of awareness. You pick up the thoughts, feelings, emotions of other people anywhere from 8 to, 100 miles out in all directions. So when these thoughts come to you, ask, who does this belong to? And if it lightens up, it's not yours. Tell it to go away. And she started doing that. And it was very cute because her mother said, I thought you were full of shit when you said that. But I was out with my daughter the other day and I was thinking, oh my God, I love her so much. And she turned and looked at me and she says, I love you too, mommy. You know, it's like we all pick up these thoughts, feelings, and emotions from people all the time. You know, it's like, do you have children?
Yeah, we got 4.
Wow. You're brave. or foolish, one of the two.
Yeah. A little bit of both.
You know, but it's like the thing is, it's like you ever notice that when babies, you know, are born, it's like you have a baby there and it's like they hit a note. You're sound asleep and you're up and running down the hall before you're even awake.
No, you know the different cries for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. But they also will look at you and you'll suddenly find yourself doing something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would argue a lot of that is body language too, you know.
It ain't body language. They can actually communicate with you telepathically. We all have this ability, but most of us don't use it or do it. It's like, I know you've had the experience of somebody calling when you were thinking about them, or you calling somebody and they were saying, God, I was just thinking about you.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
It happens to all of us, but it's not a happening. It's a reality. And we have so many abilities that have never been acknowledged and that there's no justification for and there's no logical reason for it. And so most of us won't even let ourselves have it.
Man, this is a deep conversation, Gary.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize for that. So I just have – because you've been awesome with your time. I just got 2 quick questions for you. You know, what's next for Gary and Access Consciousness? You know, you are 75, getting younger by the day. I think next time I talk to you, it'll be 70. But
I hope so. Actually, I'm going to be 39 again. Damn, was I good looking when I was 39.
I still didn't have hair at 39. I'm still bald. I'm still bald at 39. I'm bald at 32.
You got a great-looking head. Are you kidding?
No, I do have a good head. I get commented on all the time.
You know why guys go bald?
I thought it was testosterone, but you're going to tell me something different.
It's too much time between a woman's legs looking.
Ah, come on. So what's next for Access Consciousness?
Well, it's like Access is on a constant state of exploration, and it's like everything we do in Access is about finding something else that will create greater possibilities. And we are, you know, it's like in one of the things we just talked about this week, new, is that if you look at this reality as inside of you, instead of you being inside this reality, you will stop making yourself wrong. And what is the reality you have that you've never, you know, integrated into this reality? And when you start looking from that direction, it's like you stop making yourself wrong and you have a sense of peace that it's not that you don't fit. This just isn't your reality. But you're certainly aware of it, and you can certainly function with it, and you certainly have success in it. And what else is possible?
Is this like a visualization?
Nope. It's just an awareness. You could do it as a visualization if you wanted to. I think that's way too much work, but okay.
Because I'm trying to think about that whole sense of reality, right?
So just look at it from a point of view. Okay, look, if this reality is inside of you, instead of you in this inside of this reality, what difference would it make in the way you look at the world?
It gives you a better sense of control, for sure.
And you realize you're not nearly as wrong as you've made yourself.
So, you know, I was thinking that sense of reality, one of those things, you know, we started the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I talked about I'm on this journey. I'm on this journey of self-discovery. I'm on this journey of consciousness, living with awareness and purpose and intent. And it's an amazing process when you start decoupling your pre-programmed thoughts that, you know, is the record that kind of skips around and around and around again. And you start trying to interrupt that and engage in more positive, meaningful questions and curiosity. And it helps you as an individual feel at least like you have more control over the choices that you're making. And
what if reality is that the one gift you came in with and the one gift you were giving was the choice of choosing? See, it's the one gift God gives us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's free will to choose.
Mm-hmm.
How do we use it?
Yeah.
Like judging ourselves? Good idea, right?
No, that's super powerful too. I think people forget that. They forget they have a choice how they react. They have a choice of what they say. They have a choice of where they go. Like, they just forget.
This is a world based on choice, not even intention.
Yeah.
Intention is something we try to use to overcome the things we've chosen that we don't think we can change. But if you realize this reality is inside of you, not you're inside this reality, then you can choose to change beyond this reality, and you can choose beyond this reality with total ease.
Hmm. Well, Gary, this has been a super awesome, insightful, deep conversation, and I appreciate it. I have one last question, which you've already answered, but I have to end with it again.
Okay.
So it's on the books. So how do you, for where you're at, where you're going, what you do, how do you define happiness?
Happiness is a choice you get to make in every moment of every day, and I don't do it from judgment.
Hmm.
You cannot choose happiness from judgment. You can only choose happiness from the gratitude for everything that is and everyone that is, as just as they are, not as you would like them to be.
I like that. The gratitude part is such an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, it is.
And where can my audience find out more about you, your organization? I mean, right now I have your website up, so I'm assuming it's at www.accessconsciousness.com.
Yep, and you can contact Gary at accessconsciousness.com. There's my business partner, Dane, here, has all kinds of, Dr. Dane here, the tour of consciousness. There's all kinds of tools we have. It's like we do everything we can to give as many tools as possible to everybody with the hopes that we can get the world to change fast enough for us not to friggin' kill the place.
Well, Gary, thank you for your time, your energy, and your willingness to sit down with me on Executives After Hours.
Thanks so much. You're awesome, James. You might be bald, but you're still a cool guy.
Spread the word and put it on all the bathroom walls where you can.
Okay, will do.